I don't even know what they're referring to. I don't understand female parts.
But that might be why it was so awkward to me, because I'm like trying to like visualize what she's saying, and I'm like, are you saying
Get
I
in
don't know.
there, like get in there.
Right.
Maybe. If there's someone who understands straight sex, please let us know.
Oh, Dawson, look, there's your mom. Back to you, Bob.
Hello, and welcome to Back to You, Baba Dawson's Creek podcast. We are your hosts, Christina and Micah, and this is episode 302, Homecoming, which originally aired on October 6, 1999.
October 6th.
We're back in school.
We're doing it. The drama was popping. Some of my friends had their licenses. No, this was junior year. We were taking PSATs.
Call ahead.
We were taking PSATs. We were taking Greek. I was taking my junior, senior electives.
I'm sorry, you were taking Greek?
I was in Greek 1. I was in French 2.
What?
This is junior year. We're popping.
You say that like all juniors take Greek.
Well, I went to a Jesuit high school. You could take Greek, Latin. Well, you had to take Latin for 2 years, but I took it for all four. And I opted into Greek 1 in my junior year. Yeah.
How exciting. You have to go to Greece.
It would be nice.
You'll be able to chat your way around town.
Right now, I just go to Nick the Great, which is like the Greek place on the corner.
This was my freshman year of high school. What a turn between middle school and high school. I feel like everyone comes back. Everybody has this. I feel like we keep saying renewed sense of energy, but it's true. It's like the braces are off. People have their periods. Things are happening.
They didn't have them in middle school. I don't know how that
Everybody's
works.
Different. I feel like eighth grade is like the last group of people get their periods. And then freshman year, all bets are off. Everybody's even playing field.
Everyone's perioding.
Blood everywhere.
Bloodbath. My question is, did you go to a new building for high school or was it the same building?
We had 7th through 12th in the same like building, but we only shared the gym and the cafeteria. So like classrooms for middle school were in one building and classrooms for high school were in another building.
Okay.
So it did feel like, you know, a change.
It felt special.
Yeah, sure. It was so special.
No blood in that building. Tons in the other.
It's crazy. It's like a butcher shop.
God. I hope no one's eating while they're listening.
Trigger warning.
I'll put an explicit. You could choose to put explicit on each episode. Well, what are we drinking?
Today we're drinking the Cheerleader. It is 1 ounce pomegranate juice, 1/2 ounce of orange juice, and 3 ounces of Prosecco. It's basically just a mimosa, but with more pomegranate juice, just a splash of OJ.
Loves it.
Love it. And you know what? Pomegranate juice is really good for you.
Is it?
Yeah. I used to work with an editor. His doctor told him to drink a bottle of it a day.
Wow. Well, maybe I'll start. You know, I love a trend, like a health trend or a...
Absolutely. You love a healthy moment.
I love a healthy moment. I need more of them. Well, I'm going to dive into the recap. This is episode 302, Homecoming. And it opens with Pacey and Dawson. They're on the quad. Pacey's nervous. He's excited. Today's the day that he picks up Andy from the mental health facility that she was at all summer. And it's a big surprise because she wasn't scheduled to come home until tomorrow. Dawson offers to go with him to pick her up, but he says that Joey's coming with him, actually. She's very eager to see Andy. And after the events of last week's episode, Dawson and Joey are not on great terms. But he's very excited at the prospect of Pacey and Joey becoming friends. And as we know, Dawson asked Pacey to look out for Joey in the wake of him rejecting her last week. So the conversation quickly turns to even Dawson. He says he hasn't seen her since the night of the party and there's no trace of her. He's been looking for her everywhere, even at the strip club. They said she was a temp. No one knows anything about her. No one even knows her name. And it's just then that Dawson is pulled into a janitor's closet. And it's Eve. She pulls him into a passionate embrace. And they're kissing and they're going at it. And she reveals that she goes to Capeside High now. She's a senior. Dawson is a little confused because he thought she was actually older than that. She tells him to watch it. He's excited to see her, but he says that an appearance by Eve is usually followed by a disappearance shortly thereafter. She kisses him again and runs out of the closet. He follows her and he runs smack into his father, who, as we know, is the football coach this season, and the new principal, Principal Green. They tell him that he is just who they were looking for. They really need his help. They need his help in making a documentary for the football team, the Cape Side Minutemen. They want the team to be really big this year, even though they're on a three-season losing streak. And they need him to cut together a documentary of all the old footage of the team to be shown at the pep rally this week. Kind of like propaganda. Dawson's dad reminds him that he can't say no because he owes him big time for trashing the house with that party. So Dawson really has no choice. Dawson runs into Eve on the quad again later, and they have some flirty banter. She brings up his ex-girlfriend. He swears he's over her. She doesn't buy it, but she says she loves a liar. He's very confused by this. She brings up sex, and she brings up the fact that he's a virgin. And he says he's going to ignore that insult, and she says, what if it's not an insult? What if it's an invitation? She invites Dawson to have a night of unbridled, scorching, mind-altering sex. Dawson's a little taken aback. You know, he says, that's it? Just like that? No first date? No months of getting to know each other? Eve says those are small-town rituals for small-town girls. She says the sex might even be what he needs to help him get over his brunette ex-girlfriend. Eve teases that Dawson should just be ready at any time, and she'll pick the place, and she'll let him know when. So Dawson goes to the drugstore to pick up some supplies for his documentary, and he also picks up condoms. And he has a really funny interaction with all these strangers who are coaching him on which kind he should get, and all the preferences and varieties and options. Jen catches Dawson with the condoms later and says, ever since Philly, Dawson is whistling a new tune. It's kind of like Dawson for the new millennium. She gives Dawson some sex advice because she says virgins either go too fast or too slow. So using the metaphor of a sundae, she asks Dawson a series of questions, and she determines that he goes too fast. She advises him to take his time and savor every bite, every second, every inch. And she says, if he doesn't get whipped cream all over his face, then he's not doing it right. When Pacey arrives to surprise Andy and bring her home, he can't get in. Visiting hours are over for that day. But he and Joey concoct a plan to get inside and to get to Andy. So while Joey distracts the receptionist, Pacey's able to get by, and he sneaks into Andy's room where he finds her talking to a guy named Mark. Things are a little awkward. We're not really sure what's going on here. But Andy seems a little nonplussed about seeing Pacey again, and she actually seems more excited to see Joey. She's not really down for the surprise. She was waiting for her dad to pick her up the next day. At the Lindley house, meanwhile, Jack's dad is back. He's back in town because Andy's coming home and he's getting the house ready. Jack approaches his dad about when he should move home too, and Jack's dad says he thinks Jack might consider staying at the Lindley house with Jen and Grams. He doesn't understand Jack's lifestyle, and it's probably in Jack's best interest that he stays here, because he'll be happier here. Jack is heartbroken. So as we know from last week, Jen is the new cheerleading captain, and she put together some cheers which are very Jen. They're realistic and not sugarcoating. They talk about how the football team basically sucks. Jack says that cheers are supposed to be a little more peppy. While this conversation is going on, we see freshman Henry trying to convince Dawson's dad that he should be on the team. Mitch is not having it. He says that Henry is a second string freshman who should just be grateful that he's there. While Jen and Jack are talking, the football keeps landing near them and Jack keeps throwing it back. This is when Henry comes up with a plan to impress Coach Leary. He brings Jack in for a few plays and they really wow Coach Leary. Mr. Leary asks Jack to join the football team and Jack says absolutely not. A gay kid on the football team at Cape Side? That's a recipe for disaster. Mr. Leary says that winning is something that he could really use right now and he thinks Jack could use it too. So with Andy back at school the next day, we see that things are still really awkward. You know, she forgoes a night alone with Pacey to go to the pep rally, and Pacey says they are not pep rally people. Pacey can tell something is definitely off. Once they're at the rally, Andy is shocked to see that Jack is now a football player and Jen is a cheerleader. Pacey can't take it anymore, and he asks Andy to go out to the hallway to find out what's going on. She breaks down, and she says that her and Mark got to know each other in a way that no one else could. You know, they understood each other's fears. She was afraid that she was never going to get healthy and she was never going to get back to Pacey. They were both so scared. Mark has a girlfriend too, and he felt the exact same way. So Andy and Mark did sleep together, and it was an immediate regret. But Andy says that it did happen, and she doesn't know how to act around Pacey now. Pacey is heartbroken. Back inside the auditorium, Henry is announced as the new starting quarterback. He and Jack really wowed Coach Leary. But he makes a fool of himself on stage at the auditorium when he drops the football and sees Jen. He's immediately in love with her. So this is when Dawson's big Minutemen documentary starts playing. You know, a big screen comes down, they broadcast it, and behind the screen on stage, Dawson is watching. You know, he's very proud of his work. He's having his big filmmaker moment, and Eve pops up and says, now's the time. Now's the time she wants to have sex, right here, right now. So they start going at it, and they end up hitting the switch, and the screen that the documentary's on goes up and down and up and down, and then it goes up, revealing Dawson and Eve going at it in front of everybody. Dawson is shirtless. The entire school is going nuts, except, of course, for Mitch and Joey, who are both a little embarrassed. And Dawson catches a glimpse of Joey's face. So afterwards, after everything's died down, it's just the two of them, Dawson tells Eve that when he has sex with someone, he wants it to be not just for any reason, but for every reason. So this is when she lets her guard down a little, and she reveals that there's more to her than what Dawson thinks. She says it's his eyes. He has the eyes of an old soul. That's what drew her to him. They have a cute little moment. He asks for her number, and she says no. But she says Whitman, her last name that he's been looking for the last few days. It's Whitman. So Joey, meanwhile, convinces Pacey that he should at least talk to Andy and hear her out. When Pacey does, he tells Andy that, you know, she was the girl for him. She inspired him to be a better man, and he knew that she could get him through anything. He always knew how powerful their relationship was, but he had this fear that Andy never saw that she didn't believe the same thing, that she never saw how beautiful their relationship could be, like he did. And he started to fear when she got sick that he might not be the person for her as she was for him. He says he can forgive her, but he won't forget it. And as he starts to walk away, she grabs his hand and says that she loves him. He takes her hand off of him and says goodbye. Dawson, meanwhile, goes home and sees Joey sitting at the end of the dock. So he joins her and sits with her. And this is really the first conversation they've had since he's been back. Now that calmer heads have prevailed, Joey says that Dawson shouldn't feel bad about, you know, causing a scene with Eve. There was something about seeing him with her that made her realize that maybe this is really how things should be right now. Maybe Dawson was right. They need to move on. They need to meet new people. They need to have new relationships. Dawson says, they say you can still love each other and not need the person the same way you used to. So Joey says they were friends, and then they were more than that. And then they were friends, and then they were more than that. So what are they now? Dawson says they're just Dawson and Joey. She asks him if he thinks every Dawson has a Joey and every Joey has a Dawson. And he says he hopes so for their sake. And this is when he gives her his signature necklace, and they have a nice little moment sitting at the end of their dock. And that is episode 302, Homecoming.
Love it.
I love like the high school, just the drama, the pep rally, the high schooliness of it all.
Totally. There's a lot of that at the beginning of this season. I think that's why we loved it so much. It hit home. It was so true to like what we were going through.
Yeah. Who wrote this 302 Homecoming?
This episode was written by Greg Berlanti. He's back. As you will remember, last season, he was with us for the all-nighter Sex She Wrote. To be or not to be, that is the question. Reunited and parental discretion advised.
It should be noted that there was a huge, huge turnover in the writing staff between seasons 2 and 3. Almost every writer left, including showrunner Kevin Williamson. We have a new showrunner this season, Alex Gonza. And Greg Berlanti had an insane promotion from, I believe, staff writer season 2 to co-executive producer, which that's skipping a lot of levels. I mean, obviously he earned it because he wrote those powerhouse episodes from season 2, but this is a gigantic leap. And he's one of the sole remaining writers from season 2. And this will come into play later because, as you know, Greg eventually becomes showrunner. But there's more to that story and we'll get there.
But can you tell us, like, I'm sure most people don't know, from staff writer, what's the usual next step?
So you start off as a staff writer. And then you become a story editor. And then there is executive story editor. And then there is co-producer. And then there's producer. And then there's supervising producer, consulting producer, co-executive producer, which is what he is, and then executive producer. So he leaped 5 levels, I think, if I'm counting right.
Unheard of.
So that is huge. And then we'll see how we get there. But by the end of this season, he is executive producer, showrunner. And I mean, it wasn't a fluke because he's like one of the big powerhouse showrunners out there right now. It's like Shonda Rhimes, Ryan Murphy, Chuck Lorre, Greg Berlanti. So it obviously was very earned. It's just fascinating. And I mean, it's just unreal.
That's crazy.
Unreal.
And I wonder how much, like, I just wish I could have been there. Like, I wonder if he was advocating for himself and if he was like pushing it forward, or if they just recognized his talent and they were like, all right, come on, we need you. Like, we'll bump you up this high to keep you. It's very interesting.
Yeah. If I could ask him one thing, it would not be any advice, nothing. That I would just be, I need to know season two to season 4 of Dawson's. What?
How did it unfold?
Yeah, because it's just unreal. Who directed?
This episode was directed by Melanie Mayron. She was with us last season for episode 220, Reunited. So if you want to hear more about her, you can go back and listen to that episode. It's a great one. It's when Andy is seeing her dead brother, which we talked about how much we loved the performances. It was shot very creatively because she's seeing the brother. Some other people aren't seeing the brother. And yeah, it was great. Also written, co-written by Greg Berlanti, Reunited.
I believe so, yeah.
Fully written by Greg Berlanti. So they're back together. Another great episode.
We love it. Who got the guest cast shout out this week?
You know I have to give the guest cast shout out to Michael Pitt.
I know
I do. I love Michael Pitt.
So for people who don't know the name, Michael Pitt plays Henry, our little freshman quarterback. I remember when he got famous, it was not because of, but everyone talked about his resemblance to Leonardo DiCaprio.
Let me go through his credits first and then we'll get to that. He was in 24 episodes of Boardwalk Empire. He's the whole reason I started watching Boardwalk Empire. I just loved him so much from Dawson's. I think he's so cute. His most recent series was a show called Lissy's Story on Apple TV Plus with Julianne Moore and Clive Owen. It came out in 2021, and I remember it being one of those shows that, like, the show that I was working on at the time, my showrunner was like, how is there a show out right now with Julianne Moore and Clive Owen and no one's talking about it? Like, peak TV is wild. There's so much talent. There's so much everything. So I know nothing about that show, but it looks to be really good. And then his most recent movie was Reptile with Benicio Del Toro and Justin Timberlake last year, 2023.
Wow. I've never heard of any of these.
I know. There's just too much.
Reptile sounds vaguely familiar. Was that on straight to Netflix?
Is that the one that he was caught holding the hand and cheating on Jessica Biel?
I don't know. I have a really good friend that's a big Justin Timberlake, like, number one fan situation. And I think that's the only reason I heard of Reptile. I don't think I would have heard of it otherwise. I'm not on Netflix a lot though. Like, I'm not one of those people that puts on Netflix and just watches. Like, I go to Netflix to watch something specific.
Totally.
I just love Michael Pitt. I think he's so cute.
Okay. I think he's so cute. And I, as was the world, loved Leonardo DiCaprio. So then when Michael Pitt came along, I was like, oh, this is like Leonardo DiCaprio adjacent. And now I'm wondering if this is why I love Christopher Briney, who plays Conrad on The Summer I Turned Pretty, because they're all kind of like adjacent to each other in a weird way.
You think Conrad looks like Michael Pitt a little bit?
A little bit. And like, it made me think of, do you remember that movie Multiplicity?
Yes, of course.
And he's like, at a certain point, he's like, you know, when you make a copy of a copy and it's not as good as the original, like, I feel like we're just like getting further and further from Leonardo DiCaprio, but they all have this weird little thing. I just love them all.
I love him. He's so cute in this episode.
And he plays it so like earnest, and I don't know. He has like a weird little like accent. Like, you're like, you're rough around the edges, but I can't quite place why. He's so cute.
Now, we'll get judged for this because Henry turns out to, I mean, it's debatable maybe. Henry is a ride, you know, good and bad.
Yes.
You know, and today he would get canceled now, probably. But we're just talking about Michael Pitt right now.
But also, I'm trying to react to these episodes during the process of this podcast as if I'm watching them for the first time. And like in this moment, in this episode, I'm all in on Henry.
He just loves Jen the second he sees her.
I know. And he'll be with us for 15 episodes. So this is just the beginning of Henry.
Praise God, glory be. We're going to go on the journey, but for now we're loving. We're living.
We're laughing. Music moment. What do you got?
My favorite music moment, of course, is the final scene with Dawson and Joey in the dock, Time After Time cover.
Of course. I dug into this a little bit. So it's by a duo called Tuck and Patty. And first of all, Google Tuck and Patty, because when you see the little picture, you're going to think it's two women. It's not. It's a woman and a man with very long hair.
Oh, dear.
So cute, though. They're a married couple. She's a vocalist. He's a guitarist. And they just go around and tour and do this little like jazz duet thing. They teach music. And as I dug in, I really loved it. I think they're very cute.
Not Tuck having like the most beautiful curls that I've ever seen.
Tuck has a head of hair.
The most perfect curls. The quintessential curl.
Absolutely. The other fun fact that I learned about them is Tuck's niece is a woman named Annie Clark. She was a roadie for them and she became their tour manager, but she is now more widely known as St. Vincent.
Oh, wow.
The musical artist, St. Vincent, is his niece.
Good for them. It runs in the family.
Sure does. Anyway, time after time, so good. This cover is so good. It was perfect in the moment. It's just great.
Do you have a past versus present?
I couldn't think of anything for past versus present, but I wanted to go back to what you were talking about last week with Eve and how I think it was the showrunner of the season was saying it was a mistake.
It was Thomas Kapinos.
Who is one of the writers.
Yeah.
Trying not to think about where her storyline goes. But I think it's completely necessary to have somebody come in to take Dawson's attention, to close that door in Joey's mind. Without that, I feel like we would still be living in this like wishy-washy, will they, won't they, what's going on, over analytical thing that they always do.
Yes, I love Eve. I don't think her storyline was a colossal mistake at all. I love Brittany Daniel. I love the energy. I just love that I could look at a picture of Eve and just like feel everything that I was feeling at this time. And just like that sense of new year, new school, new season, like we've talked about. I love the arc. There's a mystery there. She's in Cape Side for a reason. We don't know what. We don't know who she is. I just ate it up, you know?
And I still think it's great.
We needed a baddie. You know, Abby Morgan's gone. And this is a show that talked about sex for 2 years. And like only one character was really having it. And I think they were just like, let's blow up this Joey Dawson analytical chaste banter thing that they have going on.
Yeah.
Okay, so my past versus present is that my 16-year-old little self watching this, I was like, Andy cheated on Pacey, so unforgivable. But now I'm like, give the girl a pass. She was having a mental breakdown. She didn't know she would ever get better. She found someone who's going through the same thing. She's 15, she's 16. Give her a break. And, you know, it's not like she had an affair all summer. It was one time. I don't know. Give her a break, Pace.
I cannot imagine being her and being in this facility. And like, she hasn't felt anyone relate to her on like a real level, maybe ever.
Mm-hmm.
So to have this kid come in and like relate to her.
Yeah. She's alone. She has no family, no cell phone. Like, it's not like today when you could just talk to Pacey all day. You know, she wasn't talking to Pacey. She wasn't seeing anyone. She couldn't see her brother. She couldn't see her family. You know, she didn't know if she'd ever get better. And then there's this person going through the exact same thing. You know, I don't know. And maybe just Pacey was really good at sex and like put her in the mood for sex all the time. And then she couldn't have it. And then she had sex with this guy and she's like, he's not as good. I don't know.
But also this in Pacey's mind was like his great love. So for him, I understand why it's not, he can't give her a pass.
But I also see now, like, she can't even look at him because she feels so bad. Like, totally. She can't even be around him because she feels so bad. Every interaction with him is, like, tainted because she just feels so guilty. Like, that, I think, speaks volumes to where her, you know, mind is at.
It's heartbreaking, honestly, this episode between them.
Yeah.
But we'll get into it. Should we open it up?
Yeah.
First thing, first scene, Dawson looks way older this season. I feel like I clocked it a little bit last episode, but like not in a bad way. And like he's maturing. He doesn't have that like goofy, annoying look anymore. Mm-hmm.
He definitely he worked out over summer for sure.
Yeah.
As we saw when screen goes up.
I've been begging to see Dawson shirtless for 2 seasons.
In a non-creepy way.
In a non-creepy way.
Yeah, Pacey is going to pick up Andy. He's excited. He has bubble stomach. He's nervous. It's so cute how nervous he is. And he and Joey are going.
Yes. I love how they structured this opening of the season. Dawson and Joey aren't really talking. Dawson asks Pacey to keep an eye on Joey. They're inherently like driving a little bit of a wedge between Dawson and Pacey just because Dawson's distracted with Eve and Pacey's distracted with Andy and Joey's now going more towards Pacey because of the nature. I don't know. It's just the perfect setup for everything that comes.
Yeah. I'm loving the dynamics too. You know, we did get a little taste last season of everyone getting along. They were a group and now things are very fractured. Jen and Jack are on an island of their own. Like I was halfway through last week's and halfway through this week's and I was like, where are Jack and Jen? They're very isolated.
They are. Yeah.
But I feel like that's real, you know, especially if you spend the summer apart, you know, it's going to take a little time to kind of reconnect. I also really enjoy it. You know, they set it up last week. Dawson's asking Pacey to look out for Joey. He's going to regret it. But, you know, we talked about it last year too, how they kept Kerr out a little bit. And then we had an episode without Meredith last. Like, I like the way they sometimes don't have episodes with Andy. They sometimes don't, you know, I kind of like that as well. Like Andy's in this episode. She wasn't in last week's. that gives you that feel of what the characters are feeling. You know, like they're back at school, but she's not there and she's coming back now. And I too really like the way they played with the dynamics.
I also feel like they're hitting their stride with Pacey's fashion. This is the year of the Pacey flower shirt. When I picture Pacey, I picture him in these kinds of outfits. I love it.
I mean, we didn't discuss the new opening last in episode 301, but like they all look amazing in the new opening. Yeah. Like Joshua Jackson looks full man.
He's gone full man.
Kerr looks great. Katie, a woman. This is how we know them now. You know, they don't look like children anymore.
Totally.
And Eve pulls Dawson into a janitor's closet and they're going at it. And she says she's a student and he's like, you're old.
And she was like, excuse me? That moment was amazing. He's like, really? I thought you were. And she's like, watch it.
Watch it. And we love a woman who like pulls off a short haircut.
Oh my God. What's better? Like the confidence you have to have in your bone structure to just chop off all your hair.
We love a pixie. We love a Rosemary baby.
I could never.
So they need Dawson to do this documentary, which is basically going to be propaganda to trick all of the students of Capeside High to get excited about football again. And he's like, this is what Hitler did. And Principal Green's like, I don't care. You're doing it.
You had a party at your dad's house and you crashed his boat. So you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a great film, but, you know, so it goes. I'm sure he was working with limited resources.
I know. The footage looked so old.
Who am I? Nicole? What's her name?
Nicole Kennedy.
Yeah.
Mr. McPhee is back and he and Grams are like, why didn't they ever explore that? He and Grams are just hitting it off, having coffee.
Grams is supposed to be like at least 20 years older, but she's not. Maybe they were doing it. David Dukes and Mary Beth Peel.
Look, I saw chemistry. I saw sparks. I saw sparks that could have lit that screen porch on fire.
All of that wicker furniture up in a blaze.
And he's like, thank you for watching Jack all summer. And she's like, oh, compared to my Jennifer, Jack was a saint. Compared to my harlot granddaughter. No, she's in her good era. She's not a troublemaker anymore.
No.
But Jack is like, Dad, I want to move home. And he's like,
I think no.
You're better here because you have a situation that works for you and you're gay.
You know how I feel about that.
And I'm homophobic, so you should just stay here.
Yeah, they have a real relationship because later in the episode, which I'm jumping ahead, but Grams tells Mr. McPhee to go to the pep rally and he sees that Jack is now a football player and he's like, I've changed my mind. Want to come home? And he's like, no.
I'm proud of my son for dabbling in traditional masculine activities. Move in. And he said, no, Dad, you already broke my heart. I'm staying with Grams.
But maybe ask me again later. Don't stop asking.
And we just love that Pacey stole the police cruiser.
In this episode?
Yeah, they're in a police car.
I did not even clock that.
I call it a sanitarium. I don't know what it's called. Joey's sitting outside the sanitarium on the hood of a police car.
Sanitarium.
I mean, it's a nice sanitarium. Look at all that brick.
And the like hand crocheted bedding. Did you notice?
Check me in. I will gladly go to Andy's sanitarium, hang out with Mark. So they can't get in because visiting hours are over. So Joey decides to, you know, regale the receptionist with her stories of her and Dawson and how she needs to get checked in. And then Pacey sneaks by and is able to get in the room where he catches Andy, I mean, on the bed with Mark.
And it's so awkward. She's like, all right, well, maybe I'll see you soon. And he's like, all right. And they just kind of stare at each other. You could cut the tension with a knife.
Look, I don't know what's going on inside Andy's room, but I like it.
It's that classic 90s decor that you love.
Floral curtains. Andy has pigtails now, and she's blonde again. She's blonde again.
Hey, I hate them. I hate her stupid pigtails, and I hate her stupid bangs. I think her hair is the worst. It made me irrationally angry.
Oh.
Last season when she had her pigtails, I was like, oh, they're like infantilizing her. Like, that's her vibe, whatever. But now since her haircut, I'm like, oh, she's a 30-year-old woman trying to play 16.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit what they did with Jen at the beginning of season two. I think they're trying to cover up her drastic haircut. Maybe they're trying to minimize the shock of her new look. She's also back in her overalls. And we love overalls.
She's big on the overalls. She's big on the baby tees.
Love it.
She had a little baby tee with a butterfly on it. And I was like, I basically had that. I think mine was a flower, but I had that shirt.
So Jen's cheers are basically like, we suck. We'll probably lose, but we're pretty cool. And you'll work for us someday.
Yeah. And she's like, oh no, I've gone too far. I can't get them back. The cheerleaders are all leaning in.
They're dressing like her. They're acting like her.
In this scene we were talking about earlier, Henry's trying to convince Mitch that he should be the starter. And there's a moment where Mitch grabs Henry's face and is like trying to get him to hear what he's saying. And I wrote in my notes, Mitch grabbing Henry's face is the start of a porn I'd watch.
Yeah, that was hot.
It was really hot.
And Henry's wearing his like mesh jersey.
His like practice penny or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, then they recognize that Jack is the star.
Because Jack is just catching those passes, those fly balls. They're not called fly balls. That's baseball.
The team's so bad that they keep throwing it over the fence.
Love it. The overacting that goes on at the drugstore.
That's what I was just going to say. The condom scene is so ridiculous and something that we don't do all that often in this show. Like between the pharmacist himself yelling where the condoms are located and then the three people weighing in on the condoms. I was like, this is a moment we don't see very often.
Yeah, this is definitely new showrunner energy. So Dawson is checking out. He whispers to the old checkout guy, where are the condoms? Where are the condoms? And the guy's like, or no, he says, I need condoms. I need condoms. The guy's like, we don't keep them behind the counter anymore. They're in aisle 7. The condoms are in aisle 7 or whatever. So then Dawson's mortified. The women behind him are like rolling their eyes because he's taking too long to check out. And then he goes to buy the condoms and he's staring at them. And these two old guys are like, oh, get these ones. And this lady's like, oh, get this one. So then the two guys get the one that the girl says. The creepiest part about that is the guy who comes up to Dawson is like, got a hot night planned, you just stacking up for later.
Okay, groomer.
Go away, sir. We don't want you here.
He's like, buying prophylactics has never been so complicated.
And they don't strike me as guys that would use condoms. I can't explain that. I just don't buy it.
Well, the first guy is either not having sex or he's having sex with his wife. The other guy, who knows what he's up to.
They strike me as guys that just have sex with sex workers.
In which case, best practices, I would imagine, do involve condoms.
They gave me the ick.
I didn't love them, but I liked this little scene. I thought it was like campy. I don't know if campy is the right word, but like,
just some silly comedic relief that we need sometimes.
There's a banner at the pep rally. The pep rally starts and it goes across a banner that says, I hope you score this year. Just to really drive home the energy of the cheerleaders and how bad the football team is.
Well, what I want to ask you, because I know you're a big watch connoisseur, what did you think of Andy's watch? Because I know I didn't have that one, but I know people who did.
It was like a G-Shock, right? Like a rubber kind of?
Yeah, that like futuristic-y looking kind of, you know.
Yeah, I think it's like a little G-Shock, like a little, it's got the translucent band. It's trendy.
I know. Do you remember when like Claire's and Delia's, maybe it wasn't them, like Spencer's, they put out that like green inflatable chair?
Yes.
It reminded me of that.
I loved the idea of inflatable furniture. I never had any. My friends had them. But when you sat in it, it was actually like, oh, okay.
And so there's a scene where, you know, Andy's like, Pacey, are you jealous? And he's like, how can I not be, you know? Every moment the summer I wanted to be with you and you're with someone else. And it's a romantic scene. Pacey's such a romantic. They kiss. Joey's uncomfortable. Joey has grown. Katie Holmes has hit a growth spurt. She's so tall.
You tall girl from the wrong side of the creek.
I was just going to say that. Oh my God. We're syncing up our periods.
Just like freshman year.
They're in the police cruiser. They're taking a 5-hour drive back and Andy is sobbing in secret that she has to leave the sanitarium.
Andy's really going through it. But also, like,
I don't think she's healed.
I think she just needs to get away from her old life.
What do you mean her old life?
Like her Cape Side. I think she needs to start anew. I don't know. She's really going through it. And like, it is interesting to me that they came up with this plan to pick her up a day early. Like you would think with everything that she's going through and like all of these like new routines that she's built that they would want. He could pick her up at the scheduled time. Why did it have to be a day early?
Just to surprise her.
I think that threw her off.
Yeah. She thought she'd have more time with Mark.
to say goodbye. She didn't get to say what she wanted to say.
I know. Come on, Andy. Don't disappoint me like this.
It reminded me of... So Andy's a cheater. And it reminded me of... It reminded me of an article that I read when, back in the days of Mark Sloan on Grey's Anatomy, they killed him off, as you may remember. Mark Sloan died. And they said that he had to die because he wanted to be written off. And the repercussions of him staying alive and leaving would have been so irredeemable to his other storylines that they were like, we had to kill him off. And for some reason, this reminded me of that. Like, Andy had to do something so bad that it was irredeemable in order to make way for anything to happen with Pacey and Joey, because Pacey and Andy were so built up as this like perfect couple.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I kind of tried to touch upon in my past versus present. It's not so much that like I get her cheating now. It's more like I at the time thought, oh, that's so out of character for Andy. But I don't really know. I buy it now. You know, I think they put her in the right circumstance that I do believe it. You know, she was isolated and she was scared and she did something out of character, but that doesn't mean it was out of character, you know, because sometimes it is in character to act out of character. You know, if the circumstances are right, anyone could do anything. That's what I was kind of trying to say. Like, I do feel like they crafted it in a way that I believe it now.
Totally.
And so everyone's single. Everyone's single for the first time in a long time after this episode.
That's true. Anything could happen.
They're going to be kids. You know, we talked about how Principal Green's monologue in episode one was about, like, you know, kids these days act like adults. You guys need to be like kids. We thought maybe that was like a message from the new showrunner being like, this is a kid show. Like, we're going to have them act like teenagers. We're going to have them worried about cheerleading and football, and we're going to have them single and make mistakes. And maybe 15-year-olds shouldn't act like, you know, in love married couples. I don't know. So this is just a theory I have, or we have, but it's a little bit of a reset.
And you can feel it. You can definitely feel it. I think Jen's sex pep talk to Dawson is so awkward.
I think it's like naughty and fun.
It is naughty, but I cringed through it. I don't know if it was her or if it was him or if it was the words or if it, I don't know what part of it, but it was so awkward to me.
So the intro is she finds condoms. She says, "New Philly Dawson. Wow. Dawson 2000. He's having sex." And then she says, "First time is all about pacing. Do you think you're too fast or you're too slow?" And he says, "How would I know?"
And she's like, "Okay, say you have an ice cream sundae and it's 100 degrees out and you don't have any spoon. Are you going to lick it or are you going to bite it?" And he's like, "I'd probably just bite it." Psychopath behavior. Who would say that? Then she's like, goes into how you have to savor it and savor every inch. And if you wait too long, it'll be all over the table. And otherwise, it'll be in your mouth. And if you don't get whipped cream all over your face, then you're doing it wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. She's like, savor every bite, every inch, lick it up. And if you don't end it with whipped cream on your face, then you did it wrong.
Okay, Jen.
Obviously, the new showrunner is a straight man. I don't even know what they're referring to. I don't understand female parts.
But that might be why it was so awkward to me, because I'm like trying to like visualize what she's saying. And I'm like, are you saying
get in there? Know. Like, get in there?
Right.
Maybe. If there's someone who understands straight sex, please let us. I will say, this is something I wanted to get into further down the line, but something that I did not know until recently is that the cast was very unhappy with the new showrunner.
Oh.
And the cast went to the network to basically stage a mutiny.
Wow. And that's how we ended up with Greg Berlanti?
Yes. And they shut down the show for like 2 weeks. And it was a whole thing. But maybe this was one of the things that led them there. Maybe Michelle felt as awkward saying it as you were watching it. And maybe this is one of the things that led to the cast just not loving it. Maybe they didn't love Andy cheating. Maybe they didn't love all of these things.
Crazy. So Pacey finally, after Andy skirting him for the majority of the episode, pulls her out of the pep rally. And he's like, "We have to talk. We could do it here in front of everybody, but I'd really prefer we don't." And that conversation in the hallway is so heartbreaking. You can see him realize what she's telling him and then kind of like beginning to process it. But also her heart is broken too. She's like upset with herself for having done it. And she just loves him. And it was so hard.
It is so sad. And it's like he had the concern, she alleviated it, and then he realized, like, you know, what he had feared is true. And he's just so, he does a really good job of, I know this sounds weird, like face acting. Like, mm-hmm. I could get his disgust and hurt and shock all just from like the still of his face, you know?
And it's like a subtle, it's not like, oh.
Not Dawson having abs, not James Vanderbeek being, you know, the Statue of David.
He's buff. She's buff. Game recognizes game.
The entire school's going crazy seeing them going at it. Henry loses his mind. Jen is clapping. Joey reacts the way I would react. You people are trash. This is how I would have reacted in high school. Like anyone who had sex in high school, I was like, I don't have sex. I have morals. I was just closeted.
But Mitch is even kind of proud. Mitch like has a little chuckle.
Yeah, he's embarrassed at first, but then someone like high fives him or something. And he's like, eh.
Did you notice that Joey gets hit in the face by a streamer when she's like, made me laugh.
It adds to the vibe. The vibe that like, you know, she's not enjoying and everyone else is.
Yeah, totally. I feel like people getting caught either behind a projector or behind a curtain and getting exposed to an audience is like a trope, but I couldn't think of another example. In my head, I've seen it so many times, but the only example I could think of was Love Actually. But I feel like there's a lot of shows and movies that have done that. Then Eve and Dawson talk after this moment, and he says, when I do sleep with someone, I don't want it to be for any reason. I want it to be for every reason.
Oh, Dawson. Always the romantic.
Always.
I kind of get it. You don't want your first time to be like someone you don't even know the last name.
She's a cagey lady. She doesn't give him any info. She does finally give him her last name this episode, but he doesn't know where she lives. He doesn't know how old she is. He doesn't know how to get in touch with her.
Yeah. And so she finally says, you know, it's your eyes. I love your eyes. You've the eyes of an old soul. And he does have really nice eyes. I've like never noticed them before until she said that. And then he says something like, thank you, Eve. And she says, Whitman. And he's like, what? And he's like, thank you, Eve Whitman. But do we believe that's her last name? I don't know.
Who knows? She could say anything.
I don't know if I believe anything that comes out of my mouth. I love Eve's energy. I just think she makes it, it just feels like a fresh start, fresh show. And not in the way that it's like out of tone for the show.
I also love these Pacey and Joey establishing episodes where like there's not anything happening between them, but we had a taste of it in the double date in season one of like, oh, they're actually like so good together. Banter wise, you know, they have a lot of chemistry, obviously. And I think the writers and the showrunners kind of did a good job of keeping them separate after that episode. And now they're coming back together and it's like a reminder of that.
Yeah, they've had a few moments. There's the double date episode. They have the moment in the season one finale when Joey needs Pacey to take her in his car to see her dad after visiting hours. And Pacey cuts a deal with the cop and gets her in to see the dad. They've had little moments here and there, which are super cute. There's also the moment when the rumor gets out about Tamara and he's like the town pariah. And she says, you know, I know a thing or two about being the subject of the town's gossip with my dad going to jail and cheating on my dying mom and my sister having a black boyfriend and being unmarried and having a baby, like it'll blow over kind of a thing. So they definitely have given us crumbs along the way.
And that's, this episode is reminiscent of that episode of where they're like really coming together and she's relating to him on a level that he didn't even recognize that she could, kind of thing, with the relationship. Like she's talking him through the Andy of it all. And she's like, don't make my mistake. Don't push somebody away and then realize that you want them back and then they're not there for you, you know? And he's like, oh yeah, right. You are kind of going through this.
I wanted to get your thoughts on something that Joey says in this scene that I couldn't quite understand. I think I know, but I just want to... She's saying you should talk to her. You should give her another chance or hear her out. And he says she slept with somebody else. And Joey says, you think just because the two of you were together, what she did to you hurts more? It doesn't. There's no difference, Pacey. What is she referring to? Is she referring to Dawson and Eve? Or is she referring to Pacey and Tamara? I don't know what she's referring to there.
I don't know. Interesting.
Somebody knows. Let us know.
Yeah, maybe she's talking about herself and like her and Dawson weren't together, but he...
It feels like maybe a line was cut out or something like, you know. And she basically says to Pacey in this moment, like, if you let your anger take control of you now, by the time you've cooled off and calmed down, it might be too late. And she's obviously referring to how she got mad at Dawson for, you know, putting her dad away. And now that she's ready to move on, he's over it. So she's kind of saying, don't make the same mistake I did. And he is convinced because he goes to meet Andy at their special spot.
Yeah.
We talked about it a little bit, but why do you think Jack's dad had the change of heart just seeing him on stage. What was it?
The way that I took it is that he's been probably at home alone, kind of spiraling or like thinking in his head about his gay son and like thinking certain things or like the certain way that, like, I think he hasn't had too much interaction with Jack since Andy went away and he went back home. And then to see in practice, like, oh no, this guy is still my son, and he hasn't painted his nails and become like a hairstylist or something, like whatever stereotypical gay thing he thought was happening.
The dad says something like, you know, for the first time in a long time, I saw myself in you when I saw you in that football jersey. And then Jack's like, well, you should have seen yourself in me long before that, and not just because of this. And
I honestly feel bad for both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great story point.
You can tell that they both really want to have a good relationship, but they can't quite get there.
Yeah, so sad.
It is sad.
And Pacey and Andy have their breakup scene at their spot.
The last time we saw them there was so cute.
I know. And he just says, you know, I don't think you saw the relationship the same way that I did. I saw it as this beautiful thing, and I always feared that you didn't see it the same way I did. And she says that she loves him, and he says goodbye.
Crazy. Where was your head at as a number one Pandy fan?
I think it was just kind of, I mean, I touched on it a little bit. I think I was just like so upset that they wrote Andy so out of character. But like looking back on it, like I really don't think it was out of character. I think they really put her in the right circumstance for that to happen. You know, when you're younger, everything's so black and white. When you're older, things are a little more gray. And I'm sure she felt lonely and scared.
Definitely.
Do you think every Dawson has a Joey and every Joey has a Dawson?
Ugh. I mean, for their sakes, I hope not, because it's truly just a tortured relationship.
Did you mean to mirror what Joey says in that moment or what Dawson says?
No.
Oh, because he says, I hope so for their sakes. Oh. And he said, for their sakes, I hope not.
That's funny. I didn't. You know, I hope that every person has a very deep, true, long-running friendship. But I think it's better if you're not ever sexually attracted or intimate with that person. Muddies the waters.
For sure.
I do like, it's very cliche, but all the time I say, you can't go home. Can't go home again.
Yeah, that's what Joey says to Dawson. And
Dawson gave Joey the Black Pearl necklace.
I like how they're ushering us into a new era, but they're still... These few episodes are a nice little transitional period.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't an abrupt change. It was like they're still having their analytical talks and they're still doing all these things, but we're introducing new people. We're mixing things up. We're shuffling things up a little bit.
Honestly, love it. This season is everything. I love this season. I'm so excited that we're here. And this is a nice little intro to it. And that's all I had.
That's all I have.
Oh my God.
So what you watching?
I didn't talk about this last episode, but... We have officially completed our Succession journey.
I was going to say, if you bring it up and you haven't finished it yet, I swear to God.
It's over. We've done it. It was great. I would recommend it to anyone. It's funny. It's dramatic. Mental illness abounds. It's so good.
Very funny. I mean, it's the best show of the last few years for sure. 10 years, 5 years. So you finished it, and what did you think of that episode of season 4, the episode? We won't say it in case people haven't watched, but...
So good, so emotional. So, like, the acting was top tier. Unbelievable.
I would like to rewatch that episode at some point. Just that episode.
It was really great.
For me, I decided to finally start my Bridgerton journey.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
And I have to say, I'm obsessed with it. Which, like, I've been mocking the show for 3 years, and now I'm, like, very into it.
And you're on season one?
I'm on season one, yeah. I'm not plowing through it. I'm kind of doing, like, one episode every few days, just kind of letting it ruminate, if you will. I love that show.
I haven't watched, but I remember when season one came out, people were, like, falling over obsessed with it. My mom, her friends, our friends, like, everyone was obsessed with it.
Yes, well... I recently booked a gig that requires me to write a little more romance than I'm used to. You know, I'm used to comedy. So I was like, what show can I watch that will help me become a better romance writer? And everyone was talking about Bridgerton season 3 because it had just come out. And here we are. I must say I'm very, very invested.
So I think that's it.
What are we going to drink next week?
Next week... We are drinking The Undercover Liar. You will need aged rum, rye, Bianco vermouth, Amaro Moleto, Yellow Chartreuse, and Angostura Bitters. It sounds very interesting. I'm excited to try it.
That sounds like a lot of ingredients.
Complex, indeed. And complex. Yellow Chartreuse is really hard to get your hands on, so I've heard from The Drunk Baker, who is a good follow on Instagram, that you can swap out Strega, which is much more attainable. So, I don't know. If you have it, now you know.
I can't wait, and I wonder why the drink is called Undercover Liar.
I don't know.
We'll have to find out next week.
Looking forward to it. All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.